Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict podcast. We're brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionfuelandhydration.com. You can personalize your fueling and hydration strategy so you perform at your best with 15% off your first order of electrolytes and carbohydrate fuel with the code OA23 at precisionfuelandhydration.com. So welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Coach Rob Wilby, and every week we bring you an episode of this podcast to help motivate and inspire you. There's a couple of things you could do for us before we start, actually, please. If you like and enjoy this episode, you could please follow us or subscribe on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And or if you're watching on YouTube, click like and subscribe. That really helps the growth of the show. And secondly, if you're looking for help and advice with your triathlon training, please get in touch. You can email us to help@oxygenaddict.com, or there's a link in the show notes that goes through to book a call with me. We can have a chat to see how we can best help you out. On today's episode, we are joined by Tullia Turner for an age group story, learning about her path through to Ironman Wales. Tullia, how are you today?
I'm very well, thanks, Rob. Nice to talk to you. I've heard that intro so many times, it never gets old.
And here I am doing it live in front of you. Yeah, how exciting.
Very exciting.
All right, listen, before we jump into hearing your story, I just want to give a shout out to our sponsors, Precision Fuel and Hydration. You can use their free fuel and hydration planning tool to receive a personalized strategy for your next race. Planner will help you understand your own carbohydrate, electrolyte, and fluid needs so you can refine your own strategy during training and then absolutely nail it during races. Don't forget, you can even book a free one-to-one video consultation with their athlete support team, and they'll be happy to help you nail your race nutrition plan. And then you can perform your best on race day. And remember, use the code OA23 at checkout for 15% off for our listeners. All right then, Tullia, welcome on. It's lovely to get the chance to chat to you in the flesh, as it were. How are you doing today?
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Yeah, nice day.
So we want to hear your story then of the run-up to you completing Ironman Wales, which, as we're recording, it's just a couple of months back in the past, isn't it? So first question then, what was it originally that made you want to do Ironman Wales?
So I signed up to Ironman Wales about a year before the actual event. I was actually at a strange time in my life. I wasn't feeling great mentally. I was in a bit of a, I was in a bad place, truthfully. I had sort of this really strong motivation to want to do something, to prove my own worth to myself. I had previously done a half Ironman, so completing an Ironman to me was like the next really big challenge for me to kind of show myself actually how strong I am and that I know I can do something very incredible.
Nice. That's awesome. Do you know, I think a lot of people do something like this. The Ironman can be a real like rite of passage thing, can't it? I can remember dead clearly the night before doing my first one, feeling like a total imposter with all these real triathletes in the little hostel I was staying in Australia. And thinking, like looking in the mirror and thinking, man, by this time tomorrow, you could be like these people. You could be one of these, like, yeah. I didn't know anybody in the world who'd done an Ironman apart from, you know, in Australia, everyone, it seems like, the guy at the local bottle shop's done an Ironman. So I get that desire to really prove something to yourself.
And it certainly helps with like the motivation for training, because there are training sessions you'll come across that mentally you just think, oh, I don't want to do that. But when you have the sort of this deep, something deeper rooted in you to be like, no, I know I can work through this. I found that really, really helpful when I came across those sessions, because they do come.
Yeah, they sure do. So you mentioned that you'd already done a 70.3 when you signed up for Wales. What's your sort of sporting background? How did you get into triathlon in the first place?
Okay, so originally, I've always been a sporty person, like ever since I was a kid. Like I grew up playing hockey and football and loads of other, you know, just enjoyed being outdoors, and my family were always very supportive and encouraging of that. And it sort of got to a point where fitness became a really important thing in my life. I have historical like eating issues, and it started off as a way of coping with food. Like, if I do more exercise, right, I can cope better with the food I eat. And then from that, it actually became much more important for me to become really strong and really, you know, and prove to myself how strong I am. And that was then my route to triathlon, because team sports then became constricted for me. I didn't like having to be somewhere at some time. I liked doing the run. I've always run, truthfully. I liked running in my own time. I can go out whenever I can go. I live in Devon. I'm very lucky. I can go up to Dartmoor and go for a beautiful run on the moors. You know, I live near the coast as well. Devon is the perfect place for biathlon, truthfully. We've got the hills, we've got the moors, we've got the sea, we've got everything. And that just came from a place of me wanting to do things on my own terms and becoming fitter and stronger. It's always been a strong motivation within me.
Right. Okay. So you're a triathlete mainly from a running background, would you say?
Yes, running and swimming, definitely not cycling. In fact, I only got my first road bike in 2020, I think it was, at something like September 2020. So absolutely have no cycling background whatsoever. I did the Ironman on a road bike, on my first ever and only road bike. I bought it secondhand. It was less than £1,000, and I absolutely love it. I would never trade that bike for anything. It's worth £1 million to me. It might not have all the bells and whistles, but I don't have a power meter. I don't have a TT bike. So all my training was done on my heart rate. So it's not about having all the bells and whistles. It's just, you know, you only need the basic gear, really.
Sometimes you just need the passion to get started, don't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And then obviously the cycle portion of certainly, well, any triathlon, it's the longest portion, but Ironman, you got to learn to love cycling if you're going to do it. You can't fake your way through the bike, can you? Is that something you learn to love in the training?
You do. You very much do. I think I feel like I'm quite strangely unique in that sense. I think a lot of triathletes come from a background where swimming is usually one of the weakest ones. I think most people usually have a weaker discipline. And for most people, I do believe it's swimming because it's completely technique-based rather than you know, fitness-based. But for me, I've actually always been, I'm not the best swimmer in the world, but I've always been a confident swimmer. I don't feel nervous getting into the water. I know that a lot of people do feel that. Whereas for me, yeah, the cycling was the big learning curve. So to try and do an Ironman with not a big cycling background, I did have to learn to love the bike rides. I did find the 6-hour ride and the build up towards the Ironman a little bit of a mental challenge. I found myself procrastinating, you know, until about midday, like, oh, I need to clean the kitchen. I need to do anything I can't do to get on the bike for 6 hours. But again, it comes down to your mental willpower at that point. And I know in my head, I know I'm strong enough to always get the job done. I knew I'd always do it. There's no way I'd excuse myself out of it.
Yeah.
But sometimes it was a case of, come off, you need to go now.
it's hard, isn't it? Because the bike ride tends to fall into that you either get straight out of bed and into your bib shorts and out of the door kind of ride, or the how's it 11:27 and I still haven't managed to find my overshoes. So you were with us for about a full year, wasn't it, before Ironman Wales. How did you come across us in the first place?
Oh, your amazing podcast.
Oh, was the podcast originally, was it?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember how I discovered your first one, truthfully, but I've probably listened to yours and Chris's voice for over 100 hours.
Is that right? Okay.
Yeah, I needed all the advice I could get. I had no idea what I was doing. And truthfully, that's what made me sign up in the first place is I was training a lot, so I was doing about 16 hours a week before I signed up to TOA, just because I didn't really know what I was doing, and I just thought, well, I'm doing an Ironman, so I got to get volume in there.
Right.
You got to a point where I was thinking, okay, this event is getting closer. I don't, you know, it's not something you can sort of wing, an Ironman. I was like, I don't really know what I'm doing, so I definitely need some sort of help. And a bit more structure, because, you know, I would sort of just sit on the turbo in the winter time for 2 hours, and I just thought I needed to put volume in there. And then obviously, yeah, having been with you guys, I know that that is not the case. There is lots of a variety of things you should be doing, and it's not certainly not 16-hour weeks, because that's not sustainable. And I thank you very much for the training program you did provide, because I don't think I could have sustained trying to exercise for 16 hours every week.
Oh man, I'm so glad it helped, because it's a really common story that we hear from people who they've entered this thing, they're really excited by it and kind of just want to train, right? You're just really in equal measure, probably excited and terrified at the same time. It's like, I know I've got to try, I should just be doing as much training as I possibly can. Were you, right, so not a leading question then. So Was there anything that surprised you about how the training changed after you joined us to either what you were doing before or maybe what you thought it would be like?
Yeah, certainly the volume a lot less. I think I was trying to get to the pool 5 times a week before I joined TOA. I think I was cycling for about 9 hours a week. And bearing in mind at this point, I think I was 8 months away from the event. So, you know, and then I was running as often as I could because I've always enjoyed running. So okay. I tried any gap possible to run. So I just thought I had to do more and more. I would never take a recovery day. I had no idea of the importance of recovery and the fact that you guys make recovery central. Like, it's the first thing you always advise people to plan in before they do anything else. To me, that was such an alien concept. Like, I don't want to recover. I need to exercise more. I'm doing an Ironman. What is the point in recovery? I don't have time to recover. So it completely changed my approach and my attitude towards training. And now, having left TOA, I'm still carrying that on, so it completely changed the way I see training, which has been amazing. So thank you.
Okay. Oh, that's really good to hear. What do you do in your professional life?
I'm a teacher, so it is a pretty full-on job. It's definitely not a sit-down kind of job. I start work at 7:30 in the morning and I don't finish until 5:30 most evenings. So trying to fit, you know, I found it so much better with your program, trying to fit the less hours around work. I would always swim before work. That was my morning routine. So I'd be up at 5:30 in the morning to fit in rhythm before work. And then the run or the bike ride would be an evening job. But it, you know, no matter how many hours you're training, it is still a big commitment.
Yeah.
And you do have to put the effort in if you think that an Ironman is something that you want to do. But there's no two ways about it. You have to train.
You gotta love training.
Gotta love training.
How old are the kids you teach?
So whilst I was training, I was teaching year two from a primary school teacher, and I now teach year five, which I absolutely love. But it's a very full-on job. It's a very intensive job. You know, not a lot of breaks, not a lot of time to stop and think. Again, trying to fit training around that. Just to me, it's a release, which is why. So much. I loved, especially in your program, the slow running that suited me down to the ground. There was no intense effort or intense run intervals. And for me, I just loved that because the runs became my time to relax, like calm down from a stressful day at work. I just go stick my headphones in and enjoy a nice 9-1 run.
I don't think that people who have, well, I think people can imagine, but I don't think that people who haven't been teachers can imagine. Like, lots of people are stressed in different jobs, but there's a particular kind of stress that teachers are under that I think is hard to put into words. And like, my hat goes off to you. I did it for many years and
yeah.
I'd had enough of it by the time that I went, but I can completely understand the need for the you time, between, it's hard to explain, isn't it? I've done other jobs where you go in and you have a coffee and you chat with your workmates and you do a bit of work and you wander around the office and do some photocopying. Teaching isn't like that. Teaching is you're on from like 8 o'clock when you're in all the way through the end of the day without really a chance of a break. So
it's the spinning plates of teaching. You know, you're not just a teacher, you're a carer, you're a social worker. You act like a mom sometimes for these kids. You know, you're constantly trying to spin 10 plates that are your job, and it's relentless, and you can't drop those plates.
Yeah.
What I love it anything else in the world, so it's the best job ever.
What did the kids or did the kids you were teaching know you were going to be doing this, and what
they
make of it?
They had absolutely no understanding of what an Ironman is whatsoever. We do We have a fun run at Christmas time, and it's a mile around our school. We call it the Santa run because they put their little Christmas hats on and they love it. They have a great time. So I explained it to them by saying, well, imagine, you know, that fun little mile long run we do. You have to do that 27 times. That was probably the best I could get out of them, but they have no clue. Even my work colleagues, truthfully, were just like, I can't believe that you would pay money to do something like that. Most people think it's some form of torture.
Yes.
But I absolutely love it. I love teaching and I love training. So for me, I have the best ride.
I know there's a lot of year five kids. My son's previous school would be very inspired by a teacher doing something like that. Did you find that? Were there some kids who were just kind of in awe of you once you'd done it?
Yeah, they because I was teaching year two at the time, they struggled to have an understanding of exactly what I'd achieved. But I have spoken about it once, I think, with my year fives, and they didn't really know what to say. They're just like, what?
Yeah.
What? I'm doing 80 kilometers on the bike. That took me a long time. And then I ran a marathon afterwards, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. In the lead up to Ironman Wales, and I think it's natural athletes go through periods of, well, stress and worry along the way, but also doubt that they're going to be able to get this thing done. So I'm interested in your experience of that in the last sort of 6 weeks before the event. What was going through your mind, and how confident were you that you were going to be able to do it or not?
I definitely had a lot of feelings of imposter syndrome, actually, especially even in the lead up, as in the day before, walking around like the athlete village with all these, you know, because I think there's not a lot of female thing. I think it's something like 1,800 males to 200 female ratio.
Yeah, less than 200, wasn't it?
The number of women was really, really small. And they're just walking around with all these blokes who've got these giant Iron Man tattoos on their backs and their arms or the back of their legs or whatever. You just think, cool it up. I remember racking my bike next to these two DD bikes that were probably worth about 10 grand a piece. And I was just like, oh, I don't belong here. But the bike does not make the person. We all have, you're not in competition in Ironman. Everyone knows that. And that's like the wonderful thing about it. You don't turn up these events thinking, oh, I'm going to beat you and I'm going to beat you. It's not a race against the other people who are there. We all know what it takes to get to the start line. We've all gone through our own training. We've all gone through our own struggles, and we've all gone through our own tryouts at that point. So there's a real camaraderie that morning when you wake up in the dark at 5 a.m. or I think it was even early, and that was 4:30. And there's just like this electric buzz in the air where everyone knows the undertaking they're about to do. And we're all on each other's side. Everyone wants everyone to finish. And there's such a lovely feeling about that, you know, having a background in competitive sport like hockey and football, where you're trying to beat the other team. It's such a wonderful feeling to just be with these people who are, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning and someone wants to share their pump with you so you can pump up your wheel because you're panicking that it might be a millimeter too low. You know, everyone's there to make sure that everyone's okay. And I love that part. That was definitely the buzz that would make me do it again, because
yeah.
Camaraderie amongst the people.
An old coach of mine said, he described running, but I think it's true for triathlon as well. He said the thing that he really liked about it was it's a side-by-side sport, and the competitors that you've got there are there to get the best out of you, but they don't affect your race. Like if someone's going to run a minute faster than you over 5K, well, they're going to win, but that doesn't affect whether you can still do well as well. Whereas in a hockey game, if you're up against a good team, you're going to get annihilated. And I think you're right to identify that. It's an amazing feeling to be in this big event, but it doesn't necessarily, it feels much more everyone's together moving in the same direction rather than people trying to get in front of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but the very top people anyway.
Yeah, but you're, as a normal person, you're not really affected by...
Right.
Like, it's wonderful, and I'm just in complete awe of... there were some professional female athletes at Wales, and in total awe of people who can complete, even fathom completing an Ironman in under 10 hours or way less. It just, you know, it absolutely blows my mind. Those people are incredible, and I can't think or imagine the training and the effort that would take to be at that top end of the game, and just my hat goes off them. It's incredible.
Well, I think you can imagine, because you've done mostly the same thing. It's just that we're here for a bit longer.
To do it for 37 hours a week.
Right. So Ironman Wales then is a pretty special event amongst a bunch of pretty special events. I don't know whether it's a combination of the setting itself or the kind of people it attracts, or the fact it takes over Tenby and Tenby kind of sticks out in its own little headland almost, but it's the whole town is involved in that, isn't it? It's like nothing else I've really ever been to as an event. So talk us through your experience. And you've said, you know, one of the race, the atmosphere is electric, but for people who've never been there, paint the scene and describe it.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to this part, actually, because it was on a Sunday. It was a Sunday the 3rd of September. And the following day, I actually had my first day back at work for the first day of the next year at school. So I had no time to reflect because my parents drove me up in the camper van and they drove me home that night in the camper van and it was on a lot of pain at that point. And then I went to work the next morning, less than 12 hours later. So I actually had no time to really properly reflect and sit down and really think about the day. And it was probably one of the most special days of my entire life. We were so lucky at that event. Signing up for an Ironman in Wales in September, you don't know what kind of weather you're going to get. I think last year there was some awful rainstorms, but we had wall-to-wall sunshine for the entire week, like the whole weekend before it, the buzz before, the day before, everyone walking around the athlete village in the sun. The fact that we got sun all day on a sun day in September was just unbelievable. If I had to make a complaint, it was that it was too hot, which I never thought I'd have to heat train for what doing Ironman Wales. And it brought the crowds out in absolute droves. Like you said, Wales is pretty well known for its incredible crowd support. But I think there was something extra this year because of the weather. The streets were just filled, and I mean filled to the brim. And it was just starting the day with everyone singing the national anthem on the beach was so, so emotional. You sort of walk down this really steep path down to the beach and it just littered with people from everywhere you can see. And there's something really emotional about that because you know what you're about to do. You're standing there with all these people who also know what they're about to undertake. And I truly believe, I know it was my first Ironman, but I truly believe no matter how many Ironmen you do, you can't not be nervous at the beginning of an Ironman. So this buzz of people, like there's a real genuine hum that you could actually feel it in the air. And then just these thousands of thousands, you look up and these thousands and thousands of people just everywhere. And they're just hearing it. There's no animosity. There is no anything. I genuinely cried a little bit during the national anthem because I just felt so overwhelmed by the emotions and the nervousness. But I would live that day again and again and again in my life because it was the most special moment. I remember just running into the water and getting into the water and thinking, you're doing it. You're really, today is the day, or one of this. You are doing it. And then you get out the water and people cheering and cheering as you're running up the streets. And I was so lucky. My parents were there and I had some friends there and people cheering your name. And that's so, I can't, anyone who's never been, you have to go. If you're at all into Ironman, if you're at all into long distance triathlon, you have to go. Even if you don't race, you have to just go to Wales to feel it because it was so, so special. So there's not really the words to describe how special it was, truthfully.
There's something amazing about the amphitheater feeling, isn't there? That the crowds are up on the cliff tops looking down and the bags with the shoes in are all lined up the zigzag path on the way up. It's totally unique, but it feels almost like a cross between like a gladiator's arena and like the Minak Theatre down in Cornwall. It's got that feel to it, hasn't it? It's amazing.
Yeah, it really does. And it is totally unique for that. So T1 is nearly a kilometre for the transition. And you have to pick up your shoes as you run up out off the beach and then run nearly a kilometre to your bike, which is obviously littered with people just shouting at you. And people have different methods what they do with their wetsuit. Some people take them off. Some people, I actually put mine around my shoulders. I wasn't really sure what to do. But it didn't matter because I wasn't sprinting through T1. I didn't mind what my time was. I just remember soaking it all in and thinking this. It's so incredible. And it really truly was. It was a very special day.
Did you feel like you had a good swim?
I wasn't as fast as I'd have liked to have been, truthfully. I had no time goals going into this. I mean, my first Ironman, my only goals were to finish. and run the marathon, because that's, you know, I do have my background in running. I didn't want to find that I had killed myself on the bike and then I had to walk the majority of the marathon. I wanted to run the marathon and enjoy it. So my swim, in truth, I know I could have done it a little bit faster. The water, for the beautiful day, the water was completely flat still, which I think is also pretty unheard of in Tembe. My dad actually got the most amazing picture of like shooting down over the beach and the water is completely flat, except in a little line of 2,000 swimmers just making their way around this course. And it was absolutely incredible. But I did find with my swim, I just got a really nice rhythm. I tried to stay out of the chaos of it. I seeded myself in about the 1:20 mark, because I thought I might be a bit faster than that. I don't really know. I just want to be away from people. But there are probably about 400 people in the 1:20 mark. And I swam about an extra 200 meters because I swam so far away from the boys, just trying not to get caught in the... Didn't want to be kicked in the face. Didn't want to lose my goggles. Just wanted to get into a nice motion, a nice swim, and start the day off like nice and calm, rather than thinking, okay, I've now locked my goggles, so I've been kicked in the face by someone, or I need to chase that person. I just knew I needed to get into my nice, calm rhythm, because that's when I spend my best. And like I said earlier, I'm not the strongest or the fastest swimmer, but I am a confident swimmer. And I knew nothing was going to go wrong in the swim if I was just sensible. So I stayed out of the mess and just plodded on round.
And it went to plan by the sounds of things.
It did, yeah. I was hoping for somewhere between 1:10 and 20, and I think I spanned a 1:20, I don't even remember, a 1:23 or something.
Yeah.
Nothing incredible, nothing, well, not at the end of the pack either, so I felt
well, really... You've got to remember there's at least 1,000 people out there who did the event slower than you, thinking it sounds pretty incredible to me. But like the key thing for me is you stayed really calm. That's the best way to set up your Ironman day. For anyone listening who's looking for tips in that, that's a great mindset to be in, because you absolutely don't want to be the person who goes a flat out 400 from the gun and gets swum over. And if you can have a nice mellow start to the day and feel really confident, it's a great way to start your day with an 1:20's worth of feeling good about yourself.
Exactly. And then the glorious T1, which I think, despite having an extra kilometer in an Ironman, no one needs more distance when you're doing an Ironman. Despite that extra kilometer, I think T1 was the funnest part of the day.
Really, was it? Because obviously it's deep uphill, isn't it, with the back and forths up the cliff. Did you find it really enjoyable just because of the support?
Yes, and I didn't even notice, and you're right, it is. You're literally bringing up a cliff because you've just run off the beach up into the town, which literally sits on a cliff above the beach. But I didn't notice, because you have that lid from the crowd and you have the energy. You've also done a really great 2-week taper. And hopefully by the time you do take on an Ironman, you're quite physically fit. So once you're on a 4K swim, I hope you're feeling pretty good. And honestly, I didn't feel a thing. I just felt so elevated by the crowd and just the feeling of actually I'm finally doing this Ironman. But I didn't notice it. As in, didn't notice any pain, didn't notice any effort going up the hill at all.
That's perfect. Right, so we're onto the bike then. This has traditionally not been where your strengths have been or where your background is for sure. So natural to have a bit of trepidation. Tell us about the bike leg at Ironman Wales.
So the bike leg, like the actual course, is kind of like a figure of eight loop. And then you do the top loop twice. So you do the nice big bottom loop, and then you do this top loop. You come into Tembe, and then you do the top loop again. And I knew I had a plan for my bike, because I'm not a cyclist and I don't particularly enjoy cycling that much. Sorry. I had a plan. I had a heart rate to stick to. Like I said, I didn't have a power meter, but I had been training to heart rate and I knew I had to stick to 140 or might have been 160. Claim over there. 160 BPM. And when I was on the hills, I think it was something like 180, and just stick. And so I kept saying to myself, stick to the plan. And there were some difficult moments. At one point I caught myself because I was riding along on this flat and I checked my heart rate and it was way too high. And I was like, oh, it's fine because I feel really good. And I was like, whoa, Talia, like stop yourself there. You haven't suddenly gained 20 BPM in your heart rate just because you're now doing an event. You need to calm down and you're not going to make it around. You're not going to run the marathon if you carry on at this pace. It's so easy just to get caught up with the flow of traffic when there's so many people. It's like, oh, It's nice and comfortable. But of course I felt good. I think I was 40 kilometers in at that point, and I'd just done a 2-week taper. So of course I felt like I was invincible at that point, but I did check myself. I had Chris's voice in my head actually from the many, many podcasts saying, protect the back half of your marathon. And I was like, Talia, you are not protecting your marathon at all here. So calm down. And I did. I probably let 400 people go past me on the bike. But I just knew in my head, I had this voice in my head saying, I'll see you on the run. Every time someone went past, I was like, I'll see you on the run. I know I will. I'll see you there. Let them go by. And actually, I did have a very enjoyable bike ride. I did have to change my nutrition plan ever so slightly because of the day was so hot. I needed far more actual water than I thought I would. I was carrying liquids, all the liquid gels and things and those sorts of stuff. But I had to change one of my bottles to just a bottle of water because I knew I needed to keep myself hydrated. It was so hot. Yeah. And it actually impacted my times. I had to get off the bike a few times to go to the toilet.
that's really, really smart though, because like you've got to do it. You've got to be adaptable when it's super hot like that, because otherwise, you know, you saved a few minutes getting the bottle of water and you completely ruined the marathon. So the test of whether your plan was right or not is how your run went. That's the interesting bit. How were you feeling coming off the bike regards like your confidence going into the run? How did you feel at that point? Because that's always an interesting reality check, I think, isn't it?
I felt on top of the world. I felt absolutely brilliant. I knew as soon as I got off the bike, I knew I'd stuck to my plan. I'd probably even gone slightly easier than my plan in the end, which obviously did impact my time. It meant I was slower than I probably could have been, but I didn't care about my time at all. And I got off the bike and I knew, I was like, you're going to be an Ironman. Because I knew nothing was going to happen on the run. The bike is where the difficulties happen. You know, you get a puncture or a mechanical or something. And as soon as I racked that bike and I was in that tent changing for my run, I was like, you're going to do this. You're going to be an Ironman. And that feeling, I remember stepping out of T2 back into the crowd again, because you're back in Tenby in T2. And I just felt like I was flying, and I flew. In my mind, I smiled the whole way around the marathon, and I absolutely loved it. And I probably overtook 500 people again in the marathon. So I just knew I did it. I stuck to my plan and I did it right for me. I don't think there's a right or wrong way to do an Ironman, but I did it right for me on the day, and it was amazing.
Yeah. So you managed to catch all of those 500 people you let go on the bike.
I did, and more. And they walked up the hill because so the marathon is a four loop run course, and there's a really long, steady hill. It's quite a long climb. I think it's close to a mile or something.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Well, I live in Devon. So to me...
You were right at home.
Yeah, I was like, this is fine. But the amount of people who had to walk that hill and just struggled up that hill. And I felt great.
Well, that's a really good tip, I think, isn't it, for anyone who's contemplating Wales? There is no way around it. That is a really hilly marathon. In fact, I'd be surprised if there's more than, what, quarter of the lap on the flat? It's pretty much all up or downhill, isn't it?
And so, cobbles through the town.
Yeah, and cobbles through the town as well. So it's very picturesque, but people who haven't been doing, especially I think downhill running is probably harder on race day than uphill running. If you haven't been doing that training, then you're going to get found out. So anyone who's contemplating Wales, that's Talia's tip for you right there. Start running downhill.
Go train on Dartmoor. It's brilliant.
Yeah, there you go. So you passed 400 or 500 people. Talk us through the last 5 or 10 minutes of your day then.
It's a very special moment. So you do four laps, and the hard thing about doing four laps is you kind of run past the finish line 3 times. So, and obviously you're seeing people finish, and these are total strangers to you, but you're really proud of them. You're like, you've done it. You've just had an Ironman today. Like, you go. There's no sort of animosity or jealousy of anyone else's time. It's just that there's someone else who's finished. Amazing. Good for you. Like, you're an Ironman. Fantastic work. I remember it was dark by the time I finished. But I remember coming down the streets of Tempe towards the red carpet finish. And if it's your first Ironman, you get to ring the Ironman bell. And I saw my parents. They were opposite the bell. They were shouting for me. And I went over and gave her a massive hug and just shouted at them, I'm an Ironman. And they were like, you're an Ironman. They go ring bells. And I just rang the bell, and the crowd just were even louder in that moment. And then crossing the finish line where they announce your name and tell you you're an Ironman, it was a surreal moment. I wish there was more vocabulary in English to describe the word amazing and special, because it took my breath away and I was already pretty tired.
I'm interested in whether you, or your reflections on this, did you get what you were looking for out of your Ironman experience and the year of training and the event itself? You mentioned earlier you were looking to kind of prove to yourself, you know, that you're strong enough to do this thing. And I know you've not had a lot of time to reflect on it really, but when you look back over that, do you think you've got the thing out of this that you were looking for?
Absolutely, more than. And I'm contemplating doing another one. I'm very in two minds about it. My first mind is I set out to achieve my goal. I more than achieved my goal. Tempe was an incredible, special day. The sun, the weather, the crowds, just everything about being in Tempe that day. And then I'm like, oh, I want to do it again because I know I can do it faster. I know I can do a faster Ironman. Now that I've got an Ironman under my belt, I know I can do a quicker one. But then I'm like, is it going to be as special as Tempe? Because I feel like I hit the jackpot on my first ever Ironman. I don't think it'll ever get better than that. So I'm still in two minds. I haven't signed up to anything at all yet next season. I mean, they bombard you, Ironman. Obviously, you're riding a high after finishing, and they know that. So they send you everything. It's like, sign up now, get a discount for next year. You know, we don't want to lose you. So I did my best to not succumb. I was like, just calm yourself. They are not cheap events either. But I think, I don't know. I think I will do another one. I see myself doing another one. I don't know if I see myself doing another one next year, 2024, maybe an eighth time in my life. I don't know. I'm just having the winter now to have some downtime, you know. Difficult thing about doing an Ironman is you have to dedicate so much time to training. It does take over your life. So I am now spending the winter like seeing my family more, seeing my friends more, chilling out, having some alcohol occasionally, because I banned myself from alcohol for a long time. And just relaxing. And actually now that I am relaxing a little bit more, it's kind of like, okay, now I'm seeing this without the rose tinted glasses being on. Do I want to go through that process again? Yes, probably. Maybe just not yet.
Yeah. And I think you'll get a different thing out of it the second time around. The thing you were looking for from it the first time around sounds like you definitely got, and you'll always carry that forward with you. And it sounds like maybe the motivation for maybe doing it a second time would be completely different, and that needs a different set of thinking and discussion in your own brain about. But I'm glad you got what you came for. That's really important. I think it's nice when you get what you came for and it was a good experience. I think my experience of this is that people often get what they need, but not necessarily what they want. And so it's nice to hear the story of where those two things come together. And, you know, you got what you wanted and it was what you needed as well at the same time, which is pretty great.
I'm very proud of myself. And I don't think people say that about themselves often enough, actually. It's not a thing you should be ashamed of, to be proud of yourself. And I'm really proud of myself. You know, it's the everything. It's the grit of the 5:30 a.m. alarm when you don't want to wake up and it's dark. It's the, oh, it's raining outside, but I need to go for a bike ride anyway, so I'm going to go. Or, oh, it's a really windy day and the sea is rough, but I know I need to get in and train in the sea. It's if you are the sort of person that can do those things regardless, you have what it takes to be an Ironman. I believe that's where an Ironman is. It's not in the glory on the day. It's in the 5:30 alarms. It's in the wind. It's in the rain.
Yeah. And it's in the recognizing that you had a really clear idea of why you did this. And it was that you wanted to prove to yourself that you could do some things. And now that you've proved that to yourself, you can be proud of yourself. I think a different person going in trying to prove something to maybe other people, well, then you don't get to be proud of yourself because you weren't doing it for that reason. You were doing it to impress other people. And it's up to them whether they give you their approval or not. But when you set your stall out like you did to show yourself something and you've shown it, well done. Take the minute to pat yourself on the back because, like, they're the best kind of backpacks you can get, I guess.
Absolutely. Sitting, can we agree more?
Right. So you having been through this, and I think we maybe just answered this question anyway, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What advice would you give to someone out there who's in the same position you were, who's considering doing the Ironman?
Yeah.
What have you learned from this that you can maybe pass on to them?
Recovery. Recovery is key. I got fitter doing less, and I believed doing it on my own. I believed I just had to do more. I believed I had to cycle more. I had to run more. I'm not a good cyclist. I'm going to cycle even more and more and more. But actually, taking the time, resting, recovering, I got so much stronger. I don't look at too much data, but I know that I have a nice Garmin watch. My VO2 max went up by about 7, I think. I'm now at 55 VO2 max for cycling, which is top 1% apparently for my age.
Very good. You know, very good.
I wasn't there before, and I thought I would be training 10 hours a week on the bike. So actually, less is more, and recover. Yeah. Get the gains.
That's brilliant. And look, I think a really good place to wrap this up, my reflection for you is it's really good when a person like you comes along and has got a really clear idea of why they want to do it. And most importantly, the goal for why they want to do it is self-based. There's no externals on this. There was no time goal, the clock being the target. There was no beating a person. There was no impressing another person. You've got like a very pure motive for doing it. And because of that, you seem to have got a very deep satisfaction out at the end of it. And I'm really glad for you for that.
Yeah, it was a very special day and a very special thing to become an Ironman. I have actually, despite not wanting to, I have actually got a tattoo.
You got the tattoo in the end, did you?
Not to show off, but just for me to remember to myself that,
yeah,
you know, I'm an Ironman. I'm strong.
Well, I always think it's more about what that tattoo represents to people. I don't think anyone who's got one has got it because they want to be advertising an Ironman brand. It's a very personal journey that represents an awful lot of 5:30 a.m. get-ups and a lot of conversations with yourself where you think, do I get out of bed or do I stay in bed? Do I go to the pool? Do I go for a ride in the rain? That's what that represents to you, isn't it? Not the...
Absolutely. Yeah. Endurance and grit. Just doing it for yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's okay to do things. That's what I've learned massively on this journey. It's okay to do things for myself.
Yeah. And do you know what? I'm willing to bet there's a year 5 kid somewhere who, if you haven't done this, you should play them the Ironman Wales 5-minute YouTube clip and show them what you've done. And then they can see that there'll be a year 5 kid somewhere goes, that looks pretty awesome. I think I'll do that one day.
I should. I really should. You're right. They understand it more in year 5, that's for sure.
Yeah, in year 2, they'll be like, I want to be a dinosaur.
No understanding.
All right, well, listen, thank you so much for joining us and thank you for your time. I've really enjoyed hearing your story and I'm really glad for you that you got out of this what you came for.
Thank you, me too. And thank you very much. And thank you to all of you at TOA because I didn't think I could have done it without you. Certainly not in the same way. I think it could have been a much more painful experience than a positive one. So thank you so much for everything you've done.
I'm glad we could help out in some small way. That's awesome. You did all the hard work though. You remember that. We just guided you along a bit. You did all the hard stuff. All right, then, we'll wrap this up here, I think, then. Thanks very much for joining us and listening, everybody. There's some discount codes and deals for you here at precisionfuelandhydration.com. You can use the code OA23 for 15% off your first electrolyte order. And if you're looking for help with your triathlon training coaching, maybe, who knows, maybe you're inspired by Tullia to enter Ironman Wales next year. If you'd like some advice, hit us up. There's a link in the show notes. I think we've got a pretty comprehensive endurance coaching platform for busy age groupers, and we can help you balance the training around your family life and your professional life. So there's a link in the show notes. Book a call with us and we can see how we can best help you out. And if you're one of those people sitting out there thinking, oh, do you know, I think every week I should give them a call and I don't do. I talked to a guy this week who said, I've been thinking for 6 months about clicking that link and having a chat with you, who finally joined the team. So it was really nice to hear from someone who's finally gone, oh, okay, go on then. Let's have a chat and commit to something. They could be running up the steps at Ironman Wales next year. All right, Tullia, thanks again very much for your time. Remember, everybody, there's links in the show notes. You don't have to remember them. Until next week, have a great, safe training and racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby, and you've been listening to the Oxygenetic Podcast.